Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Dr. Sharman, firstly, why is violent content in general particularly damaging for developing adolescent brains?
Yeah, look, this is actually an issue that's been studied since the late 1940s, funnily enough. Concerns were raised when broadcasts of World War II started to come through, as you know, basically when television was invented. So that's just around the television issue. But now we've got this sort of brave new world of social media where you can't really necessarily switch off your smartphone. Well, you can, but teenagers are just looking at that all the time, and this footage pops up. So this is exactly what happened to my son, who's 22. He was at work, and one of the apprentices handed him his phone and said, "Oh my God, look at this." So there's no real way for parents to kind of, you know, switch that off, or, you know, in the case of even young adults themselves, for them to kind of necessarily switch that off and not look at it unless they make a decision straight away. So it's become a really interesting problem for psychologists to try and study how this is affecting the developing brain.
Mm. Well, we hear a lot about the link between violent imagery and acts of violence in things like video games, despite studies showing that there is no correlation between the two. But is there a precedence for real-world images of violence affecting teenagers in other ways?
Yes, there is. So actually, it's interesting you mention that. I won't comment on video games because I didn't look specifically at that. However, violent imagery across the media, whether it's television, Facebook or whatever, has been shown to be linked to violent acts in teenagers and just an increase in societal violence in general. And in fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics, among others, has been quite stroppy and made some fairly stern comments about the fact that the media tends to downplay that link because, of course, the media doesn't want that link to necessarily be shown or known. So it is interesting. I'm not sure the research is in full agreement that necessarily there's no correlation. I think that's probably some mixed research there, but certainly the impact of just violent imagery coming through the television or on Facebook has been shown to lead to both desensitisation and, I suppose, a tacit approval of aggressive acts, and it has been shown to be linked to increased violence in male adolescents in particular.
Mm. Does the mass distribution of violent content online change the way in which adolescents experience the world?
Yeah, so there seems to be two primary issues. The first, as I mentioned, is a desensitisation to violence. So what we seem to see psychologically is adolescents not having the fear response that you would normally have when you see a violent act, so that becomes downplayed. And then there seems to be this sort of a bit of a social context. So if it's shared a lot by their friends and their mates, there seems to be a bit of a, shall we say, a perception from the teenager that this is being approved of or is something that at very least they should be interested in. So we certainly, we certainly are seeing those impacts on the teenage brain when these violent images get blasted out via television or social media.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us here on The Daily this morning, I'm talking to Dr. Rachel Sharman from the University of Sunshine Coast about the effect of violent graphic content on adolescent brains. So, Dr. Sharman, is simply trying to limit the exposure to social media potentially a solution to this problem?
It's a great solution. I just think it's really unrealistic and impractical. So I just can't, you know, as a parent myself, how can you limit the impact of social media? It's just not possible. I think we need to look at different ways. I mean, certainly, you know, Facebook needs to try and shut this stuff down quicker and all that kind of thing. But I actually think we need to just come to acceptance that this is what our world looks like, and this sort of stuff is going to be streamed live right into your teenager's face, whether you want it to or not.
Mm. What other steps can parents and teachers take to help curb the effect of this inundation of violent imagery on adolescent brains?
Okay, so look, there has been some research that's given us some helpful ideas. The first one that I found interesting, it hadn't occurred to me, was that when you're watching these videos yourself, or if you see a news report like this, if the parent is silent, that often is interpreted by the teenager as the parent somehow approving or not having a reaction to this video. So it is important that parents really engage their teenagers and go, "Wow, look at that. What do you think about that?" The second thing is about asking the teenagers questions about it rather than just saying, "Oh my God, that's so disgusting, I can't believe that," et cetera, et cetera. teenagers seem to respond much, much better to actually being asked what they think, or even questions to help build empathy. So, you know, gosh, imagine what this must be like for their families. Imagine what it must even be like for the perpetrators' families. I mean, let's not forget that they're often victims of this behaviour as well. So helping your teenager build some empathy, look at this from different points of view, sort of developing a bit of a critical mindset about this stuff is really, really helpful from parents and teachers.
Well, I guess it's all about just having to sit down with your kid and talk about it, really. It seems like we need more of that for so many issues these days.
It really is. It is about engaging your teenager in a conversation, not just sort of sitting there and proclaiming what you think about it, but really engaging them in a conversation and having a chat about all the various aspects of that particular video.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Sharman.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.